Here we are. What's our number? Our number is 10. Lecture 10. I really should write them on here. Lecture 10. There are no secrets. Just to go on what Gertrude had just said a few minutes ago, she came for the discussion in the Hermitage. And I've just remodeled the Hermitage. And I put windows on every wall, virtually, on every wall, in fact. And in the bathroom, I have a window that's 36 inches long, you know, and equally high. Sitting there, right, looking in on the toilet, looking in on the sink. And in the other rooms, you can approach me from any wall, and I won't even know you're there. You could stand and watch me, which is so thrilling, of course. You could stand and watch whatever I'm doing. And you could be aware of what I'm doing. And as Gertrude said, this is a house where there's no secrets. Anyone can see in from anywhere, and they can even be up in the mountainside. They can be off at the cave and looking down with their binoculars and looking right into the house, if that is what they choose. But why would anyone want to do that? Why would anyone want to peek and see what was going on in the Hermitage? Because fun stuff's going on in there all the time. Happy stuff is going on in there all the time. I'm having a cup of tea. I'm working at the computer. I'm enjoying the Mac computer. I'm enjoying the PC computer. I'm hanging up my clothes. I'm laying out my bed. I'm sitting on the toilet. You know, I'm doing whatever things one would normally do in their home. And you look in there and you say, well, that's what I would do. Yeah, that I would do that. That's the things that I would. There's no secrets because there's nothing to be secret with. My whole life has been that way. We've had the mobile homes here on our campus, on the various campuses that we had, the 10 acres, the 200 acres, the 104 acres now. And always the windows were open. We never pulled the shades. Gertrude came to visit me one time when I had a beautiful little mobile home, and she says, Herb, I've got to make you some drapes, remember? And so she made these lovely drapes, and they're beautiful, but they never got closed because the sun never shone in, and when the sun did shine in, I loved it. And people would come walking along, and their head was above the windowsill, and they could look right in, and they could see. Never have I been in a building where I have been in a hidden area. Everywhere I am out in the open because that's just where I am. I'm always out in the open. I'm always doing everything for not for people to see or not to see, but because I like light and I like openness. That's why living in the city for me is not very pleasant, because you got to have your drapes closed at night. If you want to walk around your house naked at night, you got to have your drapes closed. And you can't look out and see the moonlight and the stars or anything else like that. But up here on the mountain, you can do whatever you wish because you have no one peeking in your window. But of course, there are no secrets up here. Everything everybody does is anything that anyone, if they were to look in and see it happening, they would say, it's ordinary, nothing unusual. And that's the way life is. Life is like that. Me has always been esoteric, hidden, and secret, because I did not look. Me has always been esoteric and secret, hidden, because I did not look. Now, what does that me mean? That's not Jerome's mother. That's me, the individual, you and I. We have always been secret, esoteric, hidden, primarily because we have never looked at our inner self. We have never gone into introspection. I mean, you have a terribly lax attitude about prayer and introspection and meditation time. Today, one person was out at the time of meditation beginning. Other days, some of you come in late. Some of you come in after we start. And some of you fall asleep early in the game. You fall asleep while you're in meditation before we even get to the lecture. So I know it's not the lecture that's making you fall asleep. But if you were really honest and honorable people, you would say your personal time, your introspective time, your meditative time by yourself is the most important thing you could ever have in the world, and nothing could ever take you from it. I mean, if there was an emergency, of course, you're not so tied up with your introspection that you're going to ignore emergency. If there's an emergency, you're not so tied up with your introspection and prayer that you're going to ignore the emergency. If there's an emergency, you would surely go out and be helpful at the emergency. And if you were in introspection and prayer, you would easily drop that off and go and do what had to be done. If someone were dying or hanging from the chandelier, the ladder fell down, you wouldn't say, "I'll be with you in 5 minutes and my meditation will be over." You would go immediately and put the ladder up underneath them and help them down. Why in the living daylights would you create somebody needing you, having an emergency when you are in your meditation? Now, why do people create the children come walking into their meditation room when they're doing the 3-hour meditation? Why do people doing the 3-hour meditation, which is a powerful vehicle, why do they create people with loud radios? Why do they create people who are active just outside their room? Why do they create themselves with the train track going right by their house? Think about that. If you have a train track going right by your house, the first month you're a little disturbed by it. But after that, you become immune to it. You don't hear it anymore. You don't hear it anymore. Now, do you have the same capacity not to hear the noise in the house? The kids running around screaming and hollering at you. Do you have the capacity not to hear that? Yes, you do. Do you want to? Generally, no. I'm a parent and I must be in charge of this. Well, my mother was a parent too. And my mother got a little upset with my dad one day. I told you the story. And when she got upset with him, he was saying, "You should spend more time with the family, with the kids, and do this. You shouldn't go play cards with your lady friends in the afternoon and things like that, you know." And mother said, "Oh." She says, "Herb, I've had enough of this nonsense. I want to have a room where I can meditate and pray and do my studies separate from the family. And I want to take time off from my activity with the family from, say, 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 3 or 4, whatever I choose. And I'm going to do it now. And if I do not have that right now, I will leave you and you can take care of the 5 children. Well, my dad got the message quick. He didn't really want to take care of 5 kids. Like mother does, you know. And he got off her back. But obviously, he had been watching the daytime serials on television. There was no television then. But he had been hearing the men talking about how their wives were goofing off during the day and how they were not doing their jobs and so forth. And so he just naturally thought his wife was doing the same thing. And so when he came home, he told her in that light that she should do more for the family. She shouldn't go out partying in the afternoon with her neighbor friends playing cards for about an hour or two and then come back home and do her work. She shouldn't do that. And my mother has always been a woman who is independent, capable of doing anything she wants to do. She was a writer. She would take time away from everything and she'd write for maybe an hour or two a day. And she'd go up into the attic or wherever she'd go and or in her room oftentimes and she'd write. But she always got the housework done. She had 5 kids to help her, you know. So we always had that place looking good. And the neighbor kids would come in, and they'd oftentimes help us get the work done because they wanted us to go out and play. So that worked out very good. Mother trained the neighbor children and us in maintaining the house and doing the laundry and ironing and all the other good stuff that had to be done. But you see, we are so remiss in demanding for ourselves and of ourselves the time to meditate, the time to pray. Well, as soon as Mother established that time exactly for herself, her writing completely changed. It changed from an outward Reader's Digest type writing to an inward Theosophical Society type writing, deep introspective writing with the Rosicrucians and Unity and Religious Science and everything else that she was involved with. And her writings were beautiful. She never did anything with her writings after she had gotten her time to do this, but it was important for her, and she stood up for it. Now, what if she would go in that room and just sleep? What would people think? No one would know, would they? No one would be peeking in through the windows. But she didn't. She'd go in that room and burn her incense and her candles, and she would do her thing that was important to her, and she did a wonderful thing. Now, do you have the courage, the strength, to set aside a time each day for yourself and have your meditation, have your introspection? Do you have time to look into that hidden, secret, inner place of yourself that you have not really looked at? Well, basically, no. All of you are pretty much flakes. You know what a flake is? That's an irresponsible person. You say you're going to do something and you don't do it. You say you're going to set up time for your meditation, set up time for your introspection, set up time for your writing, set up time for your treatment, and you don't do it. But I've got a job to do, and I got activities at home, and I have this and that. Hey, get up earlier. But I need to sleep. Then go to bed earlier. But I want to watch television. All right, make your decision. What is your choice? What is your choice? We here on campus do not choose to have, at least I don't choose to have television. Whatever anybody else wants to do, that's their business. We have a giant television screen that we watch videos occasionally on, hand-picked videos, and the Taibo exercises. But the thing is, that's our choice, our choice. In our seminars, we set up a program, and we have always time for introspection, time for listening within. And in our daily activity here at the monastery, we always have time for introspection, time for listening within. And some of you feel that you're above that time, that the phone has to be answered, that this has to be done. Well, you're right. You are right. The phone does have to be answered. So that means that one person who would be on introspection would be on introspection, and then the other person would not. And then the other person would be on introspection when the other was not. So that someone was always available to answer the phone. Because we tell the world that we have the Worldwide Healing Ministry here, and they can call for treatment at any time. And even during the day, we don't even stay available to these people by having, we have everybody go out on the program at one time. Everybody do the same thing at the same time. And that's not correct. That's cheating ourselves and cheating those who expect to be able to call us and ask for guidance. And we don't, you know, complain. Don't complain. Just think about what might be a good program for you. Put it in mind and watch me pick it up. Think what would be a good program for you. Put it in your consciousness and watch how I think the same thought that you do. I'm not thinking the thought to cause you to think the thought. I am thinking the thought because I think the thought. But I think the thought that you think, only when you think the thought that you think, and you think that that thought would be good to carry out. Now, if you followed that, you were awake. That's a logical syllogism working itself out there. But this is what it's all about. Don't come crying on my shoulders or anybody else's that you want to have this meditation time, you want to have that time to do this, you want to have time to study, time for other things. Just put it in your consciousness and start taking time to do it. Start exercising that reality. And that means that we have to split the time up so the phone can be answered. We have to make ourselves available for this. And then we have to start and say, what are we here for? What are we here for on campus, for one thing, or in life? Are we here to live other people's lives? Are we here to do what other people want done? Are we here to make other people happy? And if your answer to any of those things are yes, you're silly. You're very silly. The only reason you're here is to be yourself and have fun. Okay. You come to campus because you know the program is established. You know we have meditation at such a time, and we do this and we do that. Now, Anita is here, and she goes to town and does some errands. And when she's in town doing the errands, the time of meditation comes. Does she pull over to the side of the road and do her meditation? Nope. Time for introspection comes. Does she pull over to the side of the road and do her introspection? Sylvia, when she goes in town, does she take the time to sit in her car quietly and do the introspection time during the introspection time? I'd never get the shopping done. Does she take the time to do the things that are on the program of the monastery as a monk? Now, what does a Catholic person do, a priest or a monk or whoever? When it's time for Vespers, they are at peace. I had Olga Worrell, who was a very wonderful healing type lady, and she would have a special program for people all over the world who would like to have healing experiences. She would have a special program for people all over the world who would like to have a healing experience. And what was the program? How anyone have an idea in their mind? It took place every evening at 9. No matter where they were in the world. Thank you. It took place every evening at 9. If they were in Switzerland, 9 o'clock is different from 9 o'clock in Baltimore or Maryland, where she lived, where she had her work in the Methodist Church. It's different from California, different from China, New Zealand, wherever you want to go. It's different. But everywhere in the world at 9 p.m., everyone joined together for it. Now you see, well, they really should join together at Greenwich Mean Time, you know, as their focal point, and then have it be a certain time. So some people have to do it at 3 in the morning, at 2 in the morning, at 1. Other people have to do it at supper time. No, everybody does it at 9 p.m. This is a concept. Time is relative. It's a concept. And so as everyone did it with her, she and her husband oftentimes pulled some special experiments, and they would call somebody and they'd say, at 9 o'clock Maryland time, we're going to treat for you, and we're going to send you vibrations of love and healing, and please call us, which would be like 3 hours difference in the West Coast, please call us at 9876 at 6 o'clock, and, 6:30 maybe, and let us know if you had any feelings at all. So the people called at 9:30 their time in Maryland and told the Worrells what had happened. And wonderful things had happened. Wonderful, because they flowed with the meditation, they flowed with the healing, they flowed with the 9 o'clock, they flowed with the idea that power was being generated and being brought forth. Actually, it wasn't. Actually, there's no power. Actually, there's no vibrations being sent. There's nothing like that. It's just that the cause was put into motion, the law of cause and effect, click, and that's it. I say, you're whole and perfect. Now, your home perfect. Now, if I, your home is perfect, your home is perfect, you know, and get my enthusiasm, get my dynamics in there, and get really excited about it, it doesn't make it any different. It makes it a little different for me. I get excited, and I feel the juices flowing in me, and I feel myself all, you know, jazzed up. And the people around me, they say, oh boy, I feel great, you know, yes, 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 the healing is done, oh, ho, ho, ho. And you see, but that's not true. The healing is not done by all of our outward praying. Jesus said that to the people who would stand on the street corners and pray. And he said, oh ye of little faith, oh ye of strange attitudes, you stand on the street corner and pray. And you think that by your much praying and your loud protestations that God will hear you and you will have results. Well, you already have your reward. You already have the reward of feeling happy and satisfied within yourself from having done it. But it's not because you're standing on the street corner and protesting this to the world. We want to learn to go to our own inner secret place and find out that it's really not so secret. But it's just that we have spent so little time there, we're unfamiliar with it. We want to start spending more time with our inner divine self. We want to start spending more time looking behind the obscure and the unveiled the mystery. We want to look behind. And how do you look behind? It's right out in front. It's not really behind. But because we haven't looked, we think it's behind. You know, we're in a way like the blind man who is asked to describe an elephant. And so he touches the elephant. And he says, it has a big leg with prickly fur on it and so forth. He could only describe what he could feel. And this is what we have done. We have listened to our inner self, and we have only described what we could feel. We have only taken from our inner venture what we have experienced in our outer venture. And we want to be more in tune with that divine inner self, be more in tune, more harmonious with who we really are and where we're really going and what our values are. It's a very exciting adventure to do, but it's one that takes a lot of our attention. Now, how do we look behind this obscureness and unveil the mystery? How do we do that? Well, in the first place, it's not obscure and it's not a mystery. The ministers, the priests, the church, even the Rosicrucians, Theosophical Society, everybody makes it sound so difficult. They make it sound so difficult to pray. And even Jesus got screwed up. I mean, he got screwed up. Where two or more are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst of them. He should have said, like he said more often, the Father and I are one. The Father dwells within you. Go within and you will find the Father there. But he should have said, you and the Father are one. Pray unto yourself, the Father within. And the Father within, who seeth in secret, will reward you openly. You see, right away you get the secret in there, you know, make it a little bit esoteric. But it's not. Let's just take a little boy. A little boy has a father. And the little boy would like to have a few more toys. And so he goes to his father and he says, Dad, you're the greatest. You know that? I love you. And then he shuts up. He knows what he's doing. He goes away. And then later, the same day or the next day, he says, Dad, I was talking to Billy next door, and we were talking about dads. And, you know, you are so much more of a dad than anybody else on this whole block. You care about me. Dad, I'm so proud to be your son. See ya, bye. But he goes off to play. I mean, he's building. He's building. And then he comes in again, and he says, "Hey, Dad, guess what? Billy got a new bike, and is it a beauty? Come on, take a look at it. Come on, take a look at it." Later, later, later. And so then he stops. He doesn't overdo it. And then the next time, he's got Billy in hand and Billy's bike in hand, and they come rolling in the front door, and Dad's sitting in his chair there, and he says, "Dad, look at Billy's bike. Isn't that beautiful? I'm so happy for Billy. Billy is such a wonderful boy. His dad really appreciates him and gave him this bike. Isn't that beautiful? Look at the bell it has on it. And look, it's got balloon tires. It's not one of these skinny tire type things, you know. So you get a little bounce off the curb when you come bumping over it," and so forth. And the father says, yeah, it's nice. Yeah. And then he goes away. But the story goes on. The story goes on. And before the father knows it, it now becomes his desire to get his son a bike. He had no intention of doing it in the slightest, but it's his desire to get his son a bike. And so he says to his son, "You know, son, you should have a nice bike too." The plot thickens. And so the son says, "Gee, Dad, thanks. I want to do good things so that I'll be worthy of having..." "Son, you don't have to be worthy of it. You're my son. And my son always gets the best." "Gee, Dad, thanks." You know. And the story doesn't stop there. It keeps going. And so what happens? He gets the bike. It took a month or less, depending upon how well he played his cards. But now let's... You laugh and you think that's humorous, and it is, but let's look at this now from another point of view. Here you are. You're the boy, the girl, and you're going to con your dad into getting you something. You're going to get your dad to approve of something that he had no intention of approving him. So you say, "God, I think bicycles are wonderful." And God answers you, which is yourself, huh? "Yes, I do too." And then you let it go with that. Then the next day, you carry on just like you did with your earthly father. And pretty soon, your heavenly father says, "You should really have a bike. Now, you go down and you choose it, and we'll see what we can do about it." And so this is what the divine in you is telling you to do. You're hearing that, Jerome? Yeah? Okay, so this is what the divine in you is telling you to do. And so you go down and you select the bike, and you prepare yourself. You prepare yourself to receive it. And then, however it needs to happen, it takes place. Whether somebody has a bike they don't want, and it's just like the one you want, or whether your father or mother, your human father or mother, enter into it, it doesn't matter. It's yours. You have put the cause in motion, and you have prayed and treated to your divine obscure self for whatever it is you wanted. Now, it's not obscure. Did you see how easy the boy did it with his father? That's just the same way you do it with your divine self. You have thought all of your life you had to con your divine self into giving you things. And so that it was. So that was the way it happened. But you know, I was thinking the other day about a treatment that I was involved in, which none of you were involved in. But Ellen was there in the treatment in my inner self. I was treating for something, I really should say something. I can't think what it was, though. But I was treating for something, there it was. It was right there. I really wanted to have, let's just say, I wanted to have a little motor on the bike. Just keep it as a bike. I wanted to have a little motor on the bike, a little electric motor, as well as a nice bike. And as long as I'm going to have a little motor, it might as well be a powerful battery that runs the bike for maybe 10, 12 hours before it runs out, you know. I mean, that's a pretty good battery. I mean, what the heck? I'm creating this. I might as well create it good. And so I created blue one of my favorite colors are green or gold. You know, I have lots of favorite colors. And so I create this for myself. But what am I doing? I create the bike. I create the motor for it. I create the color for it. I create the seat for it. I create all that stuff. And why am I going through all that bother? When I say, I have now that perfect bike. And it's there. But back to my introspective dream, if you will. I was there, and the bike was there. But it was a red bike. And it didn't have a motor on it. And it didn't have other things that it needed to have. And Ellen was saying, well, that's what you asked for. That's what you got. And I said, yeah, but I wanted more. Well, you didn't ask for it. She was like playing God for me, you know. And I said, but Ellen, I wanted all of these things. And she says, well, they're right here, see? They're right there in the box waiting for you to take them. And you haven't even taken them. You haven't lifted them up. You haven't said, oh, there's my part. Oh, there's my things. And you see, this is the way it is with our divine self. We have this storehouse of infinite possibilities, and we do not draw upon it. We do not call upon it. We do not ask for it. Poof. And of course, we don't get it. When will we start to ask for it? When will we start to draw upon it? When will we start to experience it? And the answer is right now. But it probably was a little obtuse, the story that I was telling, because it was one of those flash in my memory, in my dream time things that went through. And I should probably tell you only the things that I have in my physical time with you. But the dream time stuff is kind of fun sometimes too. You see, I look behind the obscure and unveil the mystery. I look behind the obscure of prayer, of treatment, of that which I don't have but would like to have, and I just unveil the mystery. How can I unveil the mystery? By realizing it's just the law of cause and effect. In my relative world, it's all the law of cause and effect, and that is how I achieve anything. Now, if that's how I achieve anything, why is it I don't put it into motion and instantly resolve it right away? Well, consider what you think. Consider how we don't think we're worthy of it. Consider how we don't think that we should do it. Now, there are a lot of things that I do because I don't think I'm not worthy of it. I think I am worthy of it, in other words. There are a lot of things that I do, and you know of many of them, that are kind of nice. But there are some things that I do not do. And the reason I do not do them is that deep inside of me somewhere is a condition that says, no, that's not for you. That's not for you. And really, it's nothing more than that. Now you say, well, Herb, you shouldn't have that. I'm here to share with you guys. And so if I don't have some of these lackluster experiences, you'll say, well, oh man, you know, you never experienced it. You don't know what it's like. People call up on the phone and they say, oh, I just lost my husband and I feel so empty and so alone. I say, go find another one, you know. You know, they don't like that. But I don't really say it that fast. And I just say, release him now, let him go about his work in his dimension, and you are here, and you're on this dimension, so now get to work on this dimension. But as I work with them, I have to work slowly, and then they'll say, you don't know how it feels to be lonely. And I say, oh, yes, I do. My wife did this, or my husband did this, or my family did this. Don't ever do that. They're not calling to hear that. All we do with them is say, I understand. Now, let's go and put another cause in motion. Let's go back to straight and level flight. Let's begin again with this wonderful idea. And see, when we do that, when we begin again, then the mystery is all gone. That obscurity is no longer something that binds us and holds us, and it lets us be free. You can do that. You say, well, Herb, if you're so good and you're so wonderful, why don't you just speak your word on all the things that you are thinking about and have them instantly manifest? You'd like that, wouldn't you? Yeah. Would that help you? No, not at all. You know why it wouldn't help you? Because then you'd say, Herb, heal me. You do it for me. See, this is where Jesus got the hang up. He was teaching them how to preach and teach and heal and raise the dead. And then they wanted him to do it for them. And so he said, I got to go. Don Samota in Illusions said the same thing. He said, I got tired of being the call boy for all these people on whatever their desire was, preach and teach and heal, raise the dead. And he's right. You would too. You say, oh, I would never get tired of healing. I'd never get tired. Well, you're not only never getting tired, you're tired already. You're tired already. You don't even want to do it for yourself already. Because there's nothing about me that's different from you. There's nothing about me that's different from any one of you and how you live your lives. Because each one of you live from the same level of consciousness that I do. I don't want to say high level, but it's the same level of consciousness. Because there is no high or low. There's just a level of awareness, a level of level perhaps is the wrong word too. What's a better word? What's a better word?
Experience.
Same understanding.
What?
Understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, anybody else? Spirit? Understanding, consciousness? Level. From that same awareness, which is consciousness, which is understanding, which is spirit, which is all these things, that same awareness. Now, you can have that same awareness when you stop thinking that it's secret from you, when you stop thinking that you're not worthy of it. You can have that same awareness. Now, how do you apply the awareness? Stefan, how do you apply the awareness?
By listening within.
You apply it by listening within. Listening within reacts to what? What you have claimed for yourself. Yeah. And what have you claimed for yourself?
Whatever I have put in motion.
That's it. You put it in motion as the law of cause and effect. And you bring it about. And whatever it is what you bring about. Now you explained that to him, didn't you? So this is the important thing for each one of us. We don't need a Jesus. We don't need a God outside of ourselves. We don't need a Herb or anybody else to give us a hand. Because all I do is keep chasing you back to follow your own elusive Pimpernel. To follow your own inner experience of love and peace and joy and happiness. Because that's where it is for you. And that's what it is for you. And that's what you want to do. Now, how do we begin to put the cause in motion to bring about what we want? Since there's no secrets, how do we begin to put the cause in motion to bring out of our inner self what we want? It's a simple thing. We have used the term often. I know that I know that I know. God in me is the answer. I know that I know that I know. The divine in me is the answer. I know that I know that I know. I am the answer now. So any one of those three, there, or others, they're just fine. But I know that I know. We are speaking our word that we know all things. We're speaking our word that we are in tune, in harmony with the universal allness. And when we speak our word that we're in tune with the universal allness, are we educating ourselves? Are we teaching ourselves? And if we're teaching ourselves, what are we doing? We're teaching ourselves that we already know it. That we already know. See, all learning is just teaching ourselves that we already know it. It's just becoming aware that knowledge that we are pursuing, we already know. Now, how can you say that? How can you say you already know it? How can you say that you already have all the knowledge of the universe within you when you find it difficult to remember certain things? Well, that's a fact. All is known to you. You are the universal allness. You are that. Now, through meditation, which is to think about, and through introspection, which is to listen, all is revealed to you. How much time do you, and I don't mean time, length of time, how much quality time do you spend on introspection, in other words, listening within yourself for whatever your answer is to be? How much time do you spend? Do you spend, let's say, 2 or 3 minutes? Maybe? Do you spend the half hours or hours that we give you here in the program? Let's just ask yourself what you're doing during these times. Now, here we are. We have breakfast at 7, at 8, cleanup, 8:30 lecture, and 9:30 silent introspection. 9:30 comes oftentimes, and you don't even get up. I'm still talking oftentimes, but you don't even get up when I stop talking to instantly jump into your introspection. Should you do that? You bet. And then at 10, we go to 11, and then you prepare lunch. Now that's now, isn't it? So you should be going now to prepare the lunch. And then at 1 o'clock, lunch is over, and clean up and so forth. And then again at 2:30, the lecture, and then at 3:30, silent meditation, silent introspection. Do you take advantage of these silent introspection times? Do you instantly zap into it? You say to yourself, "When I only have so many minutes, usually 30 minutes, between lectures. How can you get much meditation done that? Sit where you are if you wish and meditate. Jump out in the sun if you wish and meditate. Lay in the pool if you wish. Float and meditate and introspect on yourself. And that's good. But, you see, it's up to you. It's up to you how you want to handle this. It's up to you what you want to do. You have to make that decision. So, all knowledge is waiting to be revealed easily within me. The knowledge of the introspective self, how our introspective self works, is available to us. How our divine self handles these things is available to us. It's up to us to really go to work on this. We'll continue with this in our afternoon lecture. But we had a little extra lecture thrown in earlier about answering some questions for you guys. And I think it would probably be a good idea always to have this on our tape right away as we do that, so that we can share it, because it's something that comes up out of the meeting itself. Okay, so you have a lovely lunch, and think beautiful thoughts, and eat whatever pleases you.